The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Coming up, an in-depth discussion of January 6th in its widest implications with Congressman Troy Nehls. Now, Troy Nehls is a former Army captain who served in Iraq and Afghanistan. He's also the former sheriff of Fort Bend County, Texas. So he's got a background in the military, in law enforcement, and he was on the scene on January 6th. He's also been, by the way, appointed by Kevin McCarthy to be a Republican on the task force on January 6th. So we're going to talk about January 6th with a man on the scene, well qualified to talk about it, Congressman Troy Nehls.
America needs this voice. The times are crazy. In a time of confusion, division, and lies, we need a brave voice of reason, understanding, and truth. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Podcast.
Troy, welcome to the podcast. It's great to have you in studio. And I want to start by talking about how we met. Well, I met you through my producer here, Debbie.
Beautiful bride.
Who has evidently known you a lot longer than she's known me. Mm-hmm. How did you meet, and what kind of projects have you two worked on together?
Oh my goodness, Dinesh. Well, congratulations, because Debbie's just a wonderful, wonderful lady. And I met Debbie over 20 years ago in our community church. And Debbie would sing. Debbie was singing praises, and just her voice is absolutely incredible, quite honestly. And she kept me coming back to church. And then eventually Debbie started a CD. It was a wonderful CD. And I tell her, I said, Debbie, you know, my beautiful bride too. I said, baby, I said, don't get jealous or anything. I said, but Debbie would put me to sleep every night while I was in Iraq with her CD. Absolutely. I would listen to her CD. And now Debbie's singing, you know, very patriotic songs, you know, God Bless America. And so she's just a wonderful, wonderful person.
And then she did some singing at events that you organized for wounded veterans and Memorial Day events, things like that.
Oh, right? Yes, because she has such a wonderful voice and such a great American, patriotic American. I had her singing at our Fort Bend Salutes America, which is a Memorial Day program. And I always told Debbie, I said, Debbie, you can never be out of town on Memorial Day. and she didn't. So she was absolutely fantastic. Very blessed to call her my friend.
I think I did that for 11 years.
Yeah, about 11 years. Wow. Well, I got to start off with something kind of funny here. And that is, I see that the Texas Democrats have filed a lawsuit against Governor Abbott. And they're claiming that he is to blame for the fact that they, quote, are suffering anxiety and distress over the separation from their families. So they're out of town. They're not in contact with their families. They think that Abbott's to blame for this. They go on to say all kinds of other things. They say things like, you know, that Abbott is violating their rights on the basis of race, quote, in that certain plaintiffs are either black or white. So evidently, the fact that they're either black or white makes Abbott kind of a racist, because he's singling them out on the basis of race.
Right.
I assume some of them are also male or female.
Sure.
He's singling them out on the basis of gender. Mm. I mean, this kind of reminds me, I think Debbie once told me about a case, and you might know the case of a guy trying to break into a house in Texas, and he crashed through the window and injured himself, and he sued the homeowner because he claimed that he had been injured on their property,
right?
I mean, these guys made a voluntary decision to skip town to avoid having to participate. Mm-hmm. Where do you think all this is going to go with these Texas Democrats?
Well, none of it surprises me with the Democrat. And what you saw early on with the private plane they flew up to to Washington, D.C., that the pitcher had a case of beer. So I think they actually thought they were going on some type of vacation, quite honestly. But it's sad. And now what you've seen, some of them, the more reasonable ones, I guess, have come back to Texas. But still, the other day you saw one of the state representatives in my district. He was arrested the other day, and some others with these peaceful protests. But they need to get back to Texas, and they need to they have a responsibility and a duty to the people that elected them in a great state of Texas. And what they're doing is they're just trying to hinder this process. But Governor Abbott has made it very, very clear. He will call a special session. You know, it can only last for 30 days. So he'll take a day off, and now he's called his second one. And he'll continue to do that until we get these rascals back in Texas where they belong. So we need to do what we need to do, and that is make sure, and this is all based on election, they feel that this is unfair to the Democrats, but we need to make sure that our elections in the state of Texas are secure from, you know, from any type of fraud. And we've seen it, Dinesh. We've seen it across our country. So I support Governor Abbott and his policy and what they're trying to do to make sure we have free and secure elections.
I mean, and whether they think it's unfair or not, I mean, there is a electoral and democratic process to resolve these issues through a vote. I mean, they just happen to be in the minority. This would be like a Republican saying, well, it's unfair. What this infrastructure bill is unfair. Yeah. Well, if Biden can get a majority and pass it through, that's the process, right?
Well, the Democrats did this 10 years ago. Remember, they went to Ardmore, Oklahoma, and that had to deal with redistricting when Tom DeLay was around. So they fled, and eventually DPS brought them back out of Oklahoma. But this doesn't surprise me at all.
Yeah. Let's talk. We want to focus in the show on January 6th, but kind of in its widest implications. Let me start by asking you. You know, you've now had a close familiarity with January 6th. You were there. You were the man on the scene, and you were the man on the scene, not in the ordinary sense that hey, I'm a congressman, I'm there. But you've got a background in the military. You've got a background in law enforcement. So you're looking at it with congressional eyes, but you're also looking at it through law enforcement eyes. Give us a sort of overview of what happened that day and perhaps a little bit of what you think of the narrative of January 6th, which is what the left has been putting out really before the day was even over.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was a congressman for 72 hours, Dinesh. I mean, I was sworn in January 3rd. This took place on January 6th. I was inside the chamber. Obviously, we had COVID. COVID was in full stride there. And so there were very limited seating down below because the House position says 6 feet, 6 feet. So there weren't that many people on the House floor. There were several up in the gallery. And obviously, we were there for the business.
Where were you exactly?
I was back at the doors, at those main doors leading into the chamber, down the center. That's where I was at the doors where the president, when he would give a State of the Union address, he would walk down that center walkway. And that's where I was positioned. There is no assigned seating on the floor. You sit wherever you can sit. So I was just towards the back doors, and we were going through Arizona. And then all of a sudden, you know, Nancy was on her throne and a bunch of uniformed people walked in and individuals in plain clothes. And it was quite an interesting. They rushed her off the podium into the back. And then the back door started shaking, and we knew that we were having some issues.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we talk a lot about that, and being on this select committee, being on this committee by McCarthy's choosing, I was honored to serve on that committee. But then Nancy did something that's never been done in the House before and rejected the minority's picks. A shame on her for that.
So she started kicking off Republican nominees to the committee, and then McCarthy basically withdrew the Republicans, right? He just said, we're not playing this game. If you can't, as the majority leader, pick the minority members of the committee. But it seems that is a clue that there were things that Nancy is afraid of, right? She didn't want certain types of questions being asked. She thought that these people may be troublemakers in her effort to foster a narrative. Do you think that's why she wanted to control the membership, to control the narrative?
Sure. When you look at the five individuals that McCarthy selected, Jim Jordan, Jim Banks, Kelly Armstrong, Rodney Davis, and I, You obviously, everybody knows who Jim Jordan is. He was going to ask some tough questions. Jim Banks was going to ask tough questions. So she did what she thought she was right to. Well, I'll just avoid the tough questions by just kicking those two off, not approving those two. And then we got together as a team under Leader McCarthy and said, well, you ain't picking two. You're not getting any of them. So it's never been done. The House historian has said in 230 years, this has never been done where a speaker has rejected the minority's picks for a committee like this.
When we come back, I'm going to ask Congressman Troy Nehls about, well, we're going to pull back for a little bit, talk about Iraq and Afghanistan, and then circle right back to January 6th.
Hey, Mike Lindell has an upcoming symposium he wants you to know about, and it's almost here. Here's Mike talking about it. Listen.
I'm having a cyber symposium on August 10th, 11th, and 12th. This historical event will be live streamed 72 hours straight on my new platform, frankspeech.com.
Now, Mike is going to be offering all kinds of specials on frankspeech.com during the symposium. To get the discounts, you'll need to use promo code Dinesh, but check those out. I want to talk to you now about a special he's having right now on his Giza Dream bed sheets. These are the best sheets. You're never going to want to sleep on anything else. The Giza sheets come in a variety of sizes and colors, and Mike is making a special offer for my listeners. Sale of the year for a limited time, 50% off. As low as $49.99 on the sheets. Call 1-800-876-0227 or go to mypillow.com. Make sure to use promo code D-I-N-E-S-H, Dinesh.
I'm back with Congressman Troy Nehls. Troy, let's start by talking a little bit about Iraq. Now, interestingly, when the Democrats, Pelosi, they talk about January 6th. They're always making comparisons to foreign policy. And this is a domestic insurrection. These are domestic terrorists who pose the greatest threat to American citizens, arguably more than Al-Qaeda, more than ISIS. So let's now move into Al-Qaeda and ISIS territory a little bit for the next couple of segments. You are in Iraq. I mean, you experienced real terrorists. You fought them. You dealt with them. So let's talk a little bit about terrorism and in the Middle East and what you saw in Iraq. And first of all, is there any reasonable comparison of that to January 6th?
Absolutely not. And, you know, I hear that there are some Democrats that are trying to compare 9/11 to what took place on January 6th. Shame on them. Shame on them. Nobody flew a plane into the Capitol on January 6th. So I think that is a stretch. It gets offensive to me and my family and other service members as well when we spoke about these Democrats wanting care packages and leaving their families because they're going to go up to Washington, D.C. for some type of a protest to avoid their constitutional duty in Texas. And I'm thinking to myself, you want to see service and you want to see commitment to this country. Go to Walter Reed and look at some of the service members that have given their all, lost limbs in defense of this country. So I think trying to use that comparison is a shame. But the fact of the matter is I was there in Iraq in 2004. Dinesh, it was early on, OIF-2, Operation Enduring Freedom. And it was troubled times. I mean, back in 2004, Dinesh, we had issues with Abu Ghraib, you know, the prison. And there were soldiers taking pictures of some of the these captives and with electrical, you know, clamps on them, and it was just horrible. So it was a very difficult time back then. There were contractors that were hanging from the bridge in Baghdad. We were going through a very difficult time. We were transitioning from the new currency into the new dinar from the old dinar. So difficult times, but the Iraqi people way back then, they were very supportive of us to being there. I mean, I dealt with a lot of people trying to rebuild their economy and infrastructure. But just difficult times. I would probably say that Paul Bremer, he was the leader there of the CPA, which is the Coalition Provisional Authority. I think they made some tactical errors back then because they totally disbanded the Iraqi military and that caused problems.
Let's talk about the Muslims over there. There obviously are some radical Muslims. Iraq is, there are Shia and Sunni in Iraq. Mm-hmm. Iraq is by and large a Shia country, which means that there are some affinities with Iran. Mm-hmm. And Iran, of course, has its eyes on Iraq. Did you find that there were Muslims in Iraq who were pro-American, were opposed to radical Islam, were people that we could work with at mm-hmm. the time mm-hmm. to try to undermine radical Islam in the region?
The people that I dealt with, being in the government, dealing with business opportunities, the individuals, it was all about the money, Dinesh. We were thrown an enormous amount of money into the system. So whether you were a Christian or you were part of the Kurdish community in the north, or Shia or Sunni, it was all about the money, in my opinion. And that's what we did. We threw an enormous amount of money into the system to try to help rebuild the communities around there, because many of them were destroyed. So it was my job to try to build, rebuild some of that infrastructure in the Kirkuk province, in that area of Kirkuk. And that's what my job was. So I didn't really have a whole lot of time to look into the psyche or try to examine their personal feelings. But I do know as the people that I dealt with were very somewhat receptive to us being there. And maybe it's because they saw good old Captain Nels back then as a dollar sign. That could be it.
Do you think, as you step back now and think about what's happened in Iraq subsequently, that this project of America sort of trying to rebuild these countries, refashion them, have you lost confidence in that a little bit, or do you think it still can be done? I remember when Colin Powell, I believe it was, said years ago, you know, if we break it, we own it, kind of like a mm-hmm. item in a store. You know, if you break it, you own it. But we've been trying to own Iraq, we've been trying to own Afghanistan, and it seems that over time our efforts have unwound over there. And is it the case that it's difficult for America from thousands of miles away to project democracy onto countries that in many cases have very little history of it?
They really don't understand it. And you look now, we've been in Iraq, 2003 was the invasion, and we're almost 20 years later. And what progress has really been made over there? Right now, you got the prime minister pretty much saying, America, get the hell out. We don't want you here anymore. So I think there's going to have to be some negotiations now with this new administration, with Biden figuring out. I think they're doing about 2,500 soldiers over there right now. But the new prime minister says, we want you out. So we've lost thousands of soldiers in Iraq. And you just hope that their lives, they paid the ultimate sacrifice. And you look at us 18 years later and you say, was it really worth it? Was it?
I don't think it was. But when we come back, I'm going to ask Troy Nels to talk about Afghanistan. It seems like things are not going very well in Afghanistan. We're going to talk about why and what's next.
If you choose to believe Google, all you need to do to surf the internet privately is turn on incognito mode in your browser. And we're supposed to trust big tech with solutions to our online privacy, right? Well, wrong. It doesn't matter what browser mode you use or how often you clear your browsing history, your internet service provider can see every single website you've ever visited, and they can even sell your data to advertisers. That's why I use ExpressVPN to keep my online data secure and private. ExpressVPN makes sure your internet service provider and third-party trackers can't see your online activity and location. It does that by rerouting your connection through a secure, encrypted server. In fact, ExpressVPN protects all your data, regardless of whether you use incognito mode. ExpressVPN has you covered with easy-to-use apps for computers and mobile devices, so you can use the internet in confidence. All you have to do is tap one button, and boom, you're protected. Protect your online activity today with the VPN that I trust to keep me private. Visit expressvpn.com/Dinesh. You can get an extra 3 months free on a one-year package. That's expressvpn.com/Dinesh.
I'm back with Congressman Troy Nels. We talked a little bit about Iraq. We're talking now about Afghanistan. Wow, it looks, Troy, like the Taliban are on the march. They're taking town after town. And as in Iraq, a 20-year project seems to be coming to an end, and not coming to an end well for us. Now, here we have this massive military. We spend giant amounts of money on it. How is it the case that our military doesn't fare that well. And look at these primitive tribesmen in Afghanistan. These are guys who seem to be living in the 11th century. And yet, at the end of the day, I think they can say, the Taliban, with some justification, you won the battle, but we won the war.
You talk very primitive. I was in Afghanistan, Ghazni province, in the middle of Afghanistan, central Afghanistan, in 2008. And I tell you, we would go out and do these humanitarian missions, these QC, quality control, inspecting different projects that the American people are funding, schools and other buildings, hospitals. And you would see individuals, and they're out in the middle of the desert, and the children are running around totally naked, no shoes, no nothing. They're like nomads. We call them the coochies. It reminded me of some biblical times, honestly, because they didn't. We would hand out a pencil. Think about that. Today you'd have to hand a kid an iPad. You handed out a pencil to a child in Afghanistan, and they would fight over a simple pencil. So primitive, they had no clue. Matter of fact, I will say this to you. We worked we worked with the Polish soldiers over there, and they would fly Russian aircraft, Hindis and Hips, and there were still people over there that thought the Russians were still there. Oh. They never thought they never knew they left. Wow. And that's years ago. That's a couple decades ago.
Now, I guess the American idea was, listen, you know, we're going to come in after 9/11. You guys, the Taliban, were the hosts of 9/11. So mm-hmm. It is imperative that we teach you a lesson and push you out of power. I think all of that was right. But then it seems like what we should have done is find the rival tribes on the other side and said, hey, guys, listen, we kicked out these bad guys. You may not be the greatest guys, but at least you're not coming over to our country and knocking over our buildings. So we're going to turn over the country to you. Goodbye. Thank you very much. But instead, we didn't do that. We thought, let's take Afghanistan from the 11th century and bring it into the 12th century.
Right.
And so that was the idea of starting and building schools. Do you think that this was a mistaken project from the start, or do you think that there was that we should have done some of it and then exited more promptly than we have, because it looks like we're now exiting with our tail between our legs. Mm-hmm. Presumably we could have left earlier at a better time.
We've been in Afghanistan longer than Iraq. And so here we are now, and you look at over 20 something years, and what progress has really been made? Again, my time in 2008, there's so much corruption, Dinesh, with whether it's contractors, whether it's with the government. There was a certain amount of, I guess you would almost say, acceptable corruption in Iraq, but it was even far worse in Afghanistan. When the American people are funding these projects and everybody wants a little envelope underneath the table. So I don't think we were really going to make a whole lot of progress, because that country is just full of corruption. But it's very, very tribal, more than even Iraq. It's very, very tribal in Afghanistan. And if you can't get all of those leaders, these chiefs from these different tribes, to come together for the sake of the whole entire country, you're not going to make any progress there.
I mean, think of how ridiculous that is, though, because first of all, these tribes don't get along among themselves on their own, and they're all Afghans. Mm-hmm. Now try to imagine a bunch of white guys coming in from the other end of the world and saying, hey, guys, you know, you should subordinate your tribal loyalties to the larger good of Afghanistan. I mean, this would be like, this is talking like nonsense.
It's not going to happen. It didn't happen. It hasn't happened. And it's not going to happen. And that's why, you know, we've left now. Obviously, you can see that this administration said we got to pull out of there. Good decision, bad decision. All I do know is we've lost thousands there as well. I lost two good friends on May 20th of 2008, Lieutenant Jeffrey Ammon and Jeffrey DePrimo. And they were just great Americans. You want to make sure that those that have given their lives and those that have come back to this country without limbs have done it for for good. And right now, I can't see that. We're leaving Afghanistan with our tail between our legs.
Well, I mean, I guess we did hold the line. The Taliban was out of power for 20 years. I think a gallant effort was made to advance things like women's rights, women's education.
Yeah.
I mean, there seems no question that's going to be now set back. But I sometimes wonder that even in those things, think of something like the hijab.
Yes.
Isn't it a fact that if you asked most Afghan women, would you rather wear the hijab or would you rather have your head uncovered?
Mm-hmm.
Probably most of them would want to wear the hijab,
right?
So it's one thing to say don't force them to wear the hijab. It's a whole other thing when Muslim women want to wear the hijab. They consider it part of Islam. My point is let them.
Right. And it's in their culture. And you made a valid point, argument about the 20 years. Yes, there was some stability and some peace. But if you knew it was going to end in 20 years, would you have gone over there in the first place? So now you have all these children and you have, yes, we were trying to do everything we could to educate the girls because girls weren't receiving education and try to help rebuild that country. But now I think what you're going to see is you're going to see more. The Taliban has already claimed three cities. They're going to go out there and reclaim more. And we're going to be back to step one again. And you have to ask yourself, okay, so it was good for 20 years, but what did we truly accomplish?
And on the larger landscape, I kind of see the Chinese vulture circling Afghanistan as if to say, listen, once the Americans are really fully out of there, we can kind of move in as the friends of the Taliban, establish trade routes alongside, you know, China, Afghanistan, Pakistan. Because Afghanistan is an important beachhead in the region strategically.
Without question.
It looks like the setback isn't just that we get out of Afghanistan, but we get out and the Chinese move in.
No question about it. So I think, you know, some tough decisions are going to have to be made with this new administration. But I revert back to my times in Iraq and Afghanistan. And now here I reflect and say, you know what? What did we truly accomplish? Yes, we brought some stability. We were looking for Osama bin Laden, and we were able to accomplish that several years ago. So mixed feelings on it, but you just have to thank the men and women of the United States military for doing the best job they can. But in the end, you got to take some of the handcuffs off of our military as well. I don't want to sit here and say that we've wussified our military, but the leadership, even with General Milley, I think he's got to go. We've got some problems with our military right now with the leadership. Not the average soldier trying to fight, but the average soldier, Dinesh, goes through that training because they are preparing for war. That's what their job is, to go to war and do what's in the best interest of this great country of ours. And you got to take the handcuffs off the service members.
Absolutely.
You really do. It's a tough battle.
When we come back, we're going to talk about a different aspect of Troy Nell's career, his time as the sheriff of Fort Bend County, Texas. I'm going to talk about defunding the police. Do you know, just 22% of homeowners refinanced their homes in the past year. Now, if you're not one of them, you could be missing out on significant savings. After all, rates are near all-time lows, meaning you may be paying too much for your home. Don't let that happen. Pick up the phone right now and call American Financing, America's Home for Home Loans. Get a free, no-obligation mortgage review so you can learn about low-rate loan programs that may fit your budget better. It could mean up to $1,000 in monthly savings. And you may be able to postpone two payments. So don't put a refinance off any longer. Pre-qualify for free by calling 888-528-1219. Again, that's 888-528-1219 or visit AmericanFinancing.net. American Financing, NMLS 182334, and NMLSConsumerAccess.org. I'm back with Congressman Troy Nels. We're talking about, well, we've been talking about Iraq and Afghanistan. Well, the wussification of the military. I want to talk a little bit about sort of the, well, I'm not going to call it a wussification of the police, because what the left is trying to do is weaken the police as an institution. Defund, that's the point of defund the police, to demoralize the police, I guess. Mm-hmm. Is there a way to demoralize the police without emboldening the criminal?
Well, first off, when it comes to defunding the police, and I have to say, you see the Democrats are now trying to back off from that a little bit. They own that narrative, Dinesh, defunding the police. And when you go back and what took place in Minneapolis with George Floyd was there's not a police officer that I've spoken to that felt what that officer did to George Floyd was a good thing. Nobody justified that. And his actions. So I think that the narrative about defunding the police is causing problems for our country, specifically the large cities. And now it's moving into the suburbs. But you look at some of those cities that actually took that movement and said, you know what, we're going to do something about it. We are actually going to actually defund the police through some type of an order through the, you know, a vote through the city council. And now you look at Seattle, you look at Baltimore, you look at Austin here in our great state of Texas. Their homicides have almost doubled. The Governor Abbott's got to augment Austin Police Department with Department of Public Safety because the officers in Austin are so demoralized, they're leaving. They're leaving that city. So I think this defund the police movement is hurting Americans. And who are they really hurting, though? These Democrats with this ideology and this mindset, they're hurting the people they're trying to capture and bring into their party. And that's the people that are in these poor areas in these inner cities where the crime is rampant, Chicago and other places. So I think it's something that the Republican Party needs to continue to talk about because the Democrats own this. And whether you're a Democrat living in inner city Chicago or in a suburb, anywhere, you cannot support the idea of defunding the police.
I followed the George Floyd trial pretty closely, and I thought what was interesting about that trial was the fact that they would bring in one police officer after another who said, we weren't trained to do this, you know? In other words, that George Floyd, that what Derek Chauvin did was anomalous. It was not part of what the manual said. It was not what police officers are trained mm-hmm. to do. So on the one hand, you have the prosecution emphasizing that this guy is a bad apple. He's not typical of the police. Mm-hmm. And if all that's true, it would follow that the solution to the George Floyd unjust killing is hold the officer accountable. Why would you want to defund the police as a group when the police as a group didn't do that to George Floyd?
Yeah, but that's what the Democrats wanted. And when you look at Officer Chauvin, he's a white guy. And you look at George Floyd, he's a black guy. And I believe the danger, really what we've seen, not just with George Floyd, but even years prior to that, is that there is a group of individuals. Al Sharpton, to me, is one of them. That he's looking, his jet is on a tarmac someplace. He's waiting to find the next white officer to shoot an African-American. That's what they want to do. I think they want to create division. There is so much hate with some of these individuals. They want to create that division between white and black. And he's waiting for the next one, that next shooting, to take place. And I think it's dangerous. I think it's irresponsible. And it certainly doesn't help law enforcement. Who's going to want to do this job making $50,000 a year, Dinesh? And a majority, 99.9% of the officers out there are working their tails off, doing great things, helping their communities. But the Democrats want to focus on the less than 0.01%.
You know, and you said it's because of hate, and I think that is part of it. But I think it's also paying for the jet. In other words, think about it. A jet's kind of expensive to operate. You need a lot of racial incidents so that you can shake this guy down, shake that guy down. I mean, Al Sharpton, I mean, if you remember Sharpton from the old days, mm-hmm. I mean, he was basically a guy who would walk around in a tracksuit. Now you look mm-hmm. at him, he's got impeccable outfits right. and he's right. traveling by private aircraft and so on. Yeah. So something's paying for that lifestyle. He doesn't do anything else.
Right.
He doesn't have a side business, and then he's right. also a racial activist. Right. Race is his business, right?
Yes. The thing about it is that jet is, the engines are on. They're ready to go. So he's out there, and they'll have the big press conference, whether it was Minneapolis, and there are others, obviously, with phones. Everybody's capturing some type of video. But they're going out there and making judgment calls already and saying that this was improper, this was illegal, this was criminal. He shot this guy. He put a knee on this guy's neck because they were black. And what has that led us to? I mean, civil disobedience across our country, like the protests, the riots over the summertime, that's how dangerous some of these guys really, really are because they're getting people so spun up, Dinesh. And look at our country in the last 18 months.
I mean, interestingly, in the George Floyd trial, as far as I could see, they never even brought up the race issue. So ironically, after making it a huge national issue, here's a trial.
Yeah.
If this guy was motivated by racial bigotry, let's see the evidence of it. There was none.
Well,
they never brought it up. Let me ask you this question. You were talking about the inner cities and the fact that it's minority communities that suffer the most, right? And they suffer the most, not just in crime, terrible schools, terrible neighborhoods, broken families. Now, mm-hmm. the Democrats have run these places for 50 years. Here's my question. Why is it that the inhabitants of those inner cities don't mm-hmm. wake up and go, look, our overlords are not doing a good job because look mm-hmm. at the misery of our ordinary lives. We have a chance. Let's throw the bums out and give the other guys a chance. I think the Democrats keep doing it because They never see that response. They never see a revolt in the inner city, in Oakland or Baltimore or Chicago, where the people go, we're going to give the other guys a chance because you guys have let us down. Why does that not happen?
It's a very good question. I think you're starting to see some of the minority communities take more of a position. Look at Trump did so well here in the great state of Texas with the Hispanic community. With the African-American community, I thought he did well as too. But I think for many, if you just provide, if the government controls your life, in their minds, it's a good thing. Just send me a check. Give me a little bit more on unemployment. Send me a stimulus check every 6 months and you'll have my support. Matter of fact, give me some free education for my kids because I'm not going to pay for it. Give me some food stamps. Give me a few more WIC cards and everything else, and you'll have my support forever. So I think that there are some people that are indoctrinated. They count. They rely. And how sad is that? They totally rely on the government for their existence. And that's sad.
When we come back, we're going to pivot really right into the January 6th debate and explore the roots of it, the narrative that's come after it, and what it all means.
We've been so conditioned by our healthcare system to wait until we're sick before we work on our health. Oftentimes we wait until it's too late and the damage has already been done. So be smart like Debbie and me. Start taking Balance of Nature today. It's not intended to be a cure-all for ailments. In fact, Dr. Douglas Howard created Balance of Nature for the purpose of getting all the right building blocks into your system so that your body can have its best shot at staying healthy. I can think of nothing easier than Balance of Nature to help build a defense against poor health. 10 daily servings of fruits and veggies, all in 6 small capsules. They're absolutely no trouble, always fresh, nothing artificial, smell amazing, and they're ready to take. Join me and experience the Balance of Nature difference for yourself. For a limited time, all new preferred customers get an additional 35% discount and free shipping on your first Balance of Nature order. Use discount code America. Call 800-246-8751. 800-246-8751. Or go to balanceofnature.com and use discount code America.
I'm back with Congressman Troy Nehls. Troy, you have been studying a bunch of the documents that give the, you almost call it the inside story on January 6th. And the first question I have to ask you about that is, could January 6th have been prevented? It seems now that it was this insurrection, it was this organized conspiracy, it was this terrorist act. But there are some indications that there was intelligence, that there were some people planning to storm the Capitol, probably not the majority of people, because you couldn't organize a conspiracy with people just randomly coming to D.C., but there were some groups that were talking about it. The FBI apparently knew about them. What can you tell us about January 6th that we don't know already?
Well, this is what I do know, is the first committee hearings as it relates to January 6th started on the Senate side with the Homeland Security and the admin, their different committees holding hearings. And that took place in February and March. So all of a sudden, they produced this very large document. They had testimony from the chief of police and the head, the General Walker of the D.C. National Guard and the sergeant at arms, which are individuals that make up this Capitol Police Board, and witnesses and officers, all sorts of people. And it's 100-something pages. And then there are other pages of other follow-up documents that I have reviewed. When Leader McCarthy asked me to review that Senate report, I knew, I said, I wonder why he wants me to do that. So I think he, you know, he selected me to be part of this committee. There were 5 of us that Leader McCarthy selected, me being one of the 5, the only freshman. So it was an honor. So I told him, I said, I'm going to read that document. And it took me about 10 days. And I took a very a deep dive into that document. And I'm telling you right now, in my humble opinion, is that there was a failure in the Capitol Police and their leadership to look at the intelligence that they had. The Capitol Police, the real question is, Dinesh, is why were the Capitol Police so ill-prepared on that day? The intelligence that they had, even pieces from the FBI, were so clear. I mean, the Capitol building was the target, but yet for some reason, There's one specific assistant chief that to me didn't do her job, and sadly she's still there today. She's still there today.
Now, I mean, what a contrast. You have an institutional failure by the Capitol Police, but it was all, I would say, camouflage, because they trot out, Pelosi does, these Capitol Police guys, and they all, one of them ends up on the cover of Time magazine. He's striking this kind of heroic posture. And it's really funny, the defund the police, the same people who are championing defund the police are like, Officer Fanone, what a hero.
Right.
So apparently on the left, it's like the police are bad, but these guys, because they're willing to do their bidding, are good. Now, wasn't Pelosi herself notified that there was trouble afoot? Wasn't there a request by the Trump administration to boost security, perhaps even bring in the National Guard? And Pelosi was like, no, we don't need it. So when you said for some reason, the question, do you think that there was a deeper reason where they were like, you know what? We'll let these guys go crazy, because if they do, we can then turn around and blame them on it, say they're disrupting the democratic process. So in other words, could it be, I'm not saying that Nancy Pelosi orchestrated this, but what I'm saying is, did she see a political advantage in not having the security that the intelligence suggested she should have?
Sure. Well, Nancy Pelosi doesn't necessarily control the Capitol Police. It's an 1,840-member law enforcement agency. But what we do know is this, is there are three members that are part of the Capitol Police Board. It's the Sergeant-at-Arms for the Senate, the Sergeant-at-Arms for the House, and the Architect of the Capitol. Now, the Architect of the Capitol is appointed by Donald Trump. The House Sergeant at Arms, which is Irving, he's picked by Nancy Pelosi, and then the Senate picked Stanger on the Senate side. So those three individuals have an enormous amount of responsibility and authority. Those are the three individuals that would have to actually, through an executive declaration by the chief of police, actually get the National Guard there. And what's interesting about the research I've done is Irving had a conversation with leadership in the House, which I believe is Nancy Pelosi, and pretty much trying to ask her, how do you feel about the National Guard? And I'm going to continue to look in this. And it's funny, because Benny Thompson, he's the chair of this committee. He said Nancy Pelosi's off limits. You are not touching Nancy Pelosi. So I think that she needs to be asked some very difficult questions, and we need to get answers, because I'm all about the truth, Dinesh. I want to get to the truth, because something that took place, we can never allow something like this to ever happen again in our nation. And so there's a lot of questions that need to be asked and answered. I don't think this committee, that Nancy's selections, Liz Cheney and some of these others, that we're ever really going to try to uncover the truth here.
Let me ask you another question that is connected to law enforcement, and that is the FBI. Now, we know, if we pull back to the FBI's involvement in the Gretchen Whitmer kidnapping plot, that the FBI was involved, I would say, to an uncomfortable degree. And what I mean by that is, it's one thing to say, all right, we're going to put a couple of agents in there. They're going to listen in on what's going on. And then they will catch the bad guys right before they can do something bad, right? It's a whole different thing to say, listen, they're going to be 13 plotters, and 8 of them are going to be our FBI agents. Right. And we're going to be actively involved in the plot, and we're going to do logistical organization. We're going to provide supplies. We're going to basically pull it off, so that if it wasn't for us, we don't even know if the other guys would have done it. So my question is, the FBI had boasted before January 6th, we're going to infiltrate the Proud Boys. We're going to infiltrate the 3%ers, the Oath Keepers, and they evidently have. My question is, do we know enough about what the FBI did and didn't do in even pulling off January 6th?
My research has shown not enough. I do know that the Norfolk office of the FBI did send some intelligence reports to the Capitol Police. I think the Capitol Police looked at that and didn't take it very seriously, which is kind of a shame. I mean, it was just kind of sent via email, and then you shared it with someone else. So I think there was a lack of preparation. I think there could have been better communication with the FBI and the Capitol Police. But I think what people really needed to understand is the timeline of January 6th and the days leading up to it. The January 5th, the 4th, the 3rd, the last day, January 3rd, was the last intelligence report the Capitol Police submitted and shared. And they only shared it with their leadership. And that assessment very, very disturbing because it contradicts itself. Most of the people, and you heard that officer, the four officers testify, one of them was Dunn. Dunn was the honest one that said, I thought January 6th was going to be no different than the Mega Million marches that took place in November and December, which were relatively, it was nonviolent. There wasn't a whole lot of commotion. And then, so he woke up, like most of the other officers that day, and said, this should be just like any other First Amendment demonstration. They weren't given the intelligence. The Capitol leadership, Capitol Police leadership, did not share the intelligence. So, but I think what's important, Dinesh, and I hope we can talk about it here, is talk a little bit about the timeline, what we knew when, and specifically on that day, as it relates to Trump's 75-minute speech.
When we come back, I'm going to continue this topic with Troy Nels, and I'm also going to explore the question of whether or not what's happening to the January 6th defendants is a political prosecution.
It's time to talk about gold and precious metals. Now, on July 4th, 1776, we declared our independence from taxation from a government an ocean away. Today, our government is the one imposing oppressive taxes and at the same time sending our wealth overseas and driving the value of the dollar into the ground through reckless spending. Now, this is the time to declare your independence for your savings. So cut your ties to the U.S. dollar and invest in gold and silver with Birch Gold Group. Now, if you haven't reached out to Birch Gold to diversify part of your IRA or 401k into a precious metals IRA, do it today. Text Dinesh to 484848. Get a free information kit on protecting your savings with gold. I buy my gold from Birch Gold. They have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, countless five-star reviews, and over 10,000 happy customers. Talk to them. Have them help you safeguard your investments. Text Dinesh to 484848 to claim your free information kit and to speak with a precious metals expert on holding gold and silver in a tax-sheltered account. Again, text Dinesh to 484848.
I'm back with Congressman Troy Nels. Troy, you were talking a moment ago in the last segment about Trump's speech and about the breaching of the Capitol. Now, from the left's narrative, one Trump speech was the cause of the other. And of course, there was a whole impeachment based on the Trump incited it. Is there any way of definitively answering the question, did Trump incite the breaching of the Capitol?
I believe so. And if you look at the timeline, and I've examined it minute by minute on the events on January 6th, at 10 o'clock in the morning already, President Trump was going to speak in an area called the Ellipse, which is near the White House. He didn't start speaking until 11:58 a.m., and his speech was 75 minutes long. So he didn't finish till about 10 after 1. The Metropolitan Police Department at already at 10:30 in the morning, and has already said, there are 25 to 30,000 people down in this Ellipse area. They're down there waiting to hear Donald Trump speak. So they sat there for a couple of hours. Donald Trump speaks at 11:58. He doesn't finish till 1:10. By 12:57 already, the first line of defense with the Capitol Police has been breached. Individuals used their bike racks and they pushed up against the police and they were able to get into the area of the Capitol. So Donald Trump was speaking at that time already. Matter of fact, the Mayor Bowser already declared an emergency, and the Sergeant at Arms was already saying, we need to get the National Guard here. Chief Sund was saying, we've got a riot going on. And while they were making those claims, Trump was still speaking. So if you look at the distance between the Ellipse where Trump delivered his speech and he finished it at 1:10. And by the way, he said, let's peacefully march to the Capitol. The line was already breached. So who were those people? Because I don't know. I've seen a lot of Trump rallies. I don't think people leave before Trump is done speaking. You know, so it would take an enormous amount of time. So my point is this, Dinesh, is that he didn't get done speaking till 10 after 1. And the first line of defense at the Capitol was breached at 12:57. So was it Trump's people? I have a difficult time because it's going to take you 15 to 20 minutes to walk to the Capitol from where he spoke.
Now, we have seen, Troy, I mean, over the past 15 months, against the backdrop of Antifa protests, BLM protests, I mean, this goes back to Trump's inauguration. You remember all the smashing of the stores. You remember the Kavanaugh hearings and the kind of storming of the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. You remember the threats that came directly from Schumer's mouth. He was basically saying, well, you know, you better watch out, Kavanaugh. You better watch. So all of this stuff is the backdrop. Now, you go down to a Trump rally on January 6th, right? And then let's just say after Trump finishes speaking, all these people mosey on over to the Capitol. And they notice that by this time, exits are open. They walk in. Crowds have a kind of mentality of their own. There are lots of people who went in there. They didn't do anything in the sense they didn't do any harm. They didn't take any pictures. They certainly didn't set the place on fire the way Antifa set St. John's Church on fire across the street. Right. So they go in there. They are trespassing. I guess they're unauthorized. But on the other hand, there's a cop over here. There's a cop over there. No one's saying, get out of here, everybody. This is, you can't be any. I never heard anything like that. So what you have are these cops who walk. In some cases, the cops appear to be literally cooperating with these guys. And then weeks later, they're hunted down by the FBI, guns drawn, get out of your house, go down on the ground. And now they're being prosecuted in a manner that at least to me is unheard of in comparison to anything that's happened to the left. Now, my question is, as a law enforcement guy, I mean, is this simply a kind of citizen's take, or is it the case that you can see and everyone else can see that there is two standards of justice being applied here?
With what you saw in our cities across the country last summer, and you mentioned the church in Washington, D.C. with the burning of the church, those individuals seem to just be getting a little slap on the wrist. But a lot of those charges are also going to be state charges. On the federal side, there is no bail or no bond. So they either hold you or they don't. And in this case, I know that there are several individuals that are being held in the federal jail in Washington, D.C. Yes, I think it's hypocrisy when you look at individuals. Yes, in my opinion, trespassing would be a charge. Disrupting Congress, I guess, would be another charge. There hasn't been anybody charged with insurrection, by the way. Right. And I guess you take the FBI and you look at this Justice Department, and they're just nothing but an arm for the Democrats. I think it doesn't surprise me that they're being held this long. It's shameful, but I think what we saw in the summer. I don't see any committee set up for the summer riots, do you? I mean, we had officers being assaulted, officers being killed, destruction of federal buildings, burning the courthouses, and destroying tens of millions of dollars worth of private business. But we're not looking into that. We're just going to look into January 6th. And we know what Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats are trying to do. They just want to blame Trump for everything. And they want to try to carry this out as long as they can so it can try to affect the 2022 election. That's my take.
When we come back, I want to ask Troy Nels a important question. Where is the GOP in all this? If all of this is going on and it's really bad, what is our side doing about it?
Hey, it's back to school time coming up. And so you got to check out all the products that Mike Lindell has, just a cornucopia, just a plethora of products, all great for the family as you get ready for a new school year. Up to 66% off with promo code Dinesh. So it's really simple. Call 800-876-0227 or go to mypillow.com to get these discounts. Make sure to use promo code Dinesh.
I'm back with Congressman Troy Nels. Troy, you know, I'm just imagining that if you unleashed a bunch of leftists into the Capitol, just the way that happened on January 6th, let's just say in the aftermath of the Kavanaugh hearing, they would have trashed the place. They would have pulled all the monuments down. They would have vandalized the Capitol. Mm-hmm. What's amazing to me is with the number of people who were in there, the most egregious acts, I mean, there were some scuffles with the police, but literally when you look at the most egregious picture, it's one guy like taking Nancy Pelosi's podium, I guess, and then kind of giving a grinning picture. The casualty of the day, and there was really just one in terms of a deliberate killing, was Ashley Babbitt, a Trump supporter, former military vet. And so my question is, you would think that the job of an opposition party, of the GOP, is to sort of go out front on this, because to not do it, it seems to me, and the GOP, as far as I can see, has been largely silent on January 6th. There's some exceptions, Louis Gohmert, a few others, but by and large, isn't this a case of leaving our troops on the field? And what I mean by that is, isn't this a case where these are guys who, most of them, I'm not talking about people who plotted, I'm talking about people who came to D.C., they were like, something's very wrong with our country. Mm-hmm. We had an election. We don't think that there's been a fair audit or accounting of what happened in the election. We're going to come to ask questions. We're going to go to the Capitol. That was their motive. They weren't terrorists. They weren't trying to take hostages, none of that. They actually weren't even trying to disrupt a democratic process so much as to make sure that the democratic process occurred in the proper sense, in the constitutional sense. They wanted Mike Pence to exercise constitutional authority. So that was their motive. Now, the demonization of these guys and the neglect of them worries me, because it tells me that how can we trust a party that is supposed to be on our side, that allows people to be victimized in this way by the left without even raising a peep about it?
It's a valid point. And, you know, when the four officers had the first committee hearing and they testified, when you look at all the video that they provided that day that they showed on TV, and obviously the Democrats are going to try to show you the worst of the worst. But when you take a deep dive and you look at all of the video inside there, there are many people inside that Capitol. Now, should they have been in there? No, they should have. But many of them stayed within the rails, right? If they were really there to cause all sorts of problems and hate this government. I mean, our Capitol building is beautiful, Dinesh. There are beautiful, beautiful artifacts. There are statues. There are paintings. They could have gone in there and completely destroyed the place. Yes, they broke windows and they did assault police officers. I can't condone their behavior. But to hold people now for 6, 7, 8 months, and the issue is they're being held on the federal charges, and the federal law states that there is no bail or bond in the federal system. You're either released or you're not. Now, you see some of these people across the cities, even in Houston, with the crime rate, and these judges are releasing some of these individuals that have been committing heinous crimes, some for murder, with very little bond. It's because they're state charges. These individuals are being held because it's a federal charge, and they don't have to offer bond. I think it's sad.
But I mean, I see the prosecutions, and you know, they'll say things like, "This guy is a danger to the community because he believes the election was stolen, so he doesn't respect the democratic process." I mean, what they're getting at here is they are, even though they deny it, they are holding these guys for having opinions that they regard as unacceptable. They're being held for a point of view that they don't agree, because they think the election was stolen, supposedly they don't respect the legal process at all.
And I believe some of them are even being held in solitary confinement, which is, I think, is a sad state of affairs. And when you look at the individuals there inside the Capitol building, there wasn't a shot fired by any one of them. They were talking about so many people having guns and this and that. There was not a shot fired by any one of those protesters, any one of those rioters.
Troy, you have an inside track here, and I would recommend that you put all this together. This is an untold story in its entirety. And I wonder, I mean, one idea would be perhaps for you to consider either doing a book or doing some kind of a report that tells the full story of January 6th, because all we're getting right now, in my opinion, is propaganda and lies.
Well, thank you. And I think that's I'll have to think about that one. But I will say this, is that I made a commitment to Leader McCarthy and to the American people on television that I'm going to do everything I can to uncover the truth. The American people need to see the truth and know the truth, whether they may not agree with it. But I think it's important that we uncover the truth. I think that this committee that Nancy Pelosi has put together is nothing but a sham. I don't think they're going to get any tough questions. I don't think we're going to ever truly find out why were the Capitol Police not prepared to deal with January 6th.
Absolutely.
Subscribe to the Dinesh D'Souza podcast on Apple, Google, and Spotify, or watch on Rumble, YouTube, and SalemNow.com.